Welcome to Indie Radio Garden, this week's highlights from community radio in the Philadelphia region.
This program brings ordinary citizens to the air to discuss issues related to health, race, safety, workers' rights, and the will to survive in pandemic times.
The first clip comes from WHGE LP, 95.3 Afro-American Historical Society of Delaware. Patrice Gibbs, the host from The Open Eye Show, interviews Dr. Yasser Payne from the University of Delaware about critical race theory.
Now, it is occurring at the public level in greater numbers in the university, right? Because you have private universities, kind of the same thing, you know, with regard to secondary and primary schooling. You have private, you have public, you have charter, which is really public, but a different kind of public, right, and everything else. Same thing, the university system more or less is set up in the same way. You have private institutions, and then you have public institutions. Some of the public institutions are really good, some of the public institutions are really designed for poor black adults or working adults, right? And you have community colleges and you have all of that. I'd like to say this, at the public level, right, critical race theory is probably being taught at the university level across private and public, right, but states can respond more easily to the public institutions, right, because the public institutions get state funding as well,
right,
so they now can declare and say and hold on, you know, with regard to your theory. And you've seen instances like this around the country. So I think, again, what you're seeing on TV, particularly media, misrepresentation, most folk don't actually know what critical race theory means, right? And that's including black people, too, right? Some of the arguments that I'm hearing on in different podcasts, and right? And it is a very difficult theory to grasp, particularly because it's really coming out of the academy, it's coming out of very theoretical, rich discussion. But if anyone want to know what it means, well, it means, Derek Bell is saying a few things, but in short, the economy is organized around anti-blackness. The target group, economic outgroup, is black Americans. This is very important. Black Americans descended of the slave South. That's the targeted group, right? That has always been our role. I didn't say it, Derek Bell said it.
Right.
No matter how much you think or aspire or hope or feel like you can do it, no matter how hard you work, Derek Bell said, Harvard, a legal scholar. I didn't say I agree, though, right? No matter how hard you work, the data has never been born or borne out that that in and of itself is going to change the massive inequality that we have experienced. There never has been a time where black Americans descended of the slave South in large mass ever experienced quality opportunity, that schooling, jobs, or otherwise. We don't have one instance of it as
that's
a people in 400 years.
That's, wow.
Yeah. This is Derek Bell, not me. The other painful thing that he's saying, right, is, right, even though we're the bottom caste and we are required to be in this situation in perpetuity, he says required. He says it's permanent, right? He says, but he says something else is even more painful. He said at the end of the day, most folk, he's speaking mainly to white folk, but other folk too, outside of this room, all they're going to do is stand on the sidelines and watch it happen. And still want the opportunity to be framed as a moral and good person. Even if they are aware, most aren't, including us,
right?
Yeah. Most of us suffer from false consciousness. We want to believe what we see on CNN. We want to believe what we see in the media. We want to believe, right? And most of us, due to just the grind of day-to-day work, it's hard to sit there and process and really understand it all, right? And not to mention we may have children or a family and we want them to live this dream.
Right.
But at the end of the day, right, we would rather believe a lie. That's a form of coping. We're all socialized. Remember them stories around Santa Claus and Easter egg? And, right? That's just putting you in a spell. And then we live in a society that's highly performative, right? And all war cultures, which we are, have to be performative. Hey, how you doing? How you doing? Right? When we are standing around obvious forms and levels of injustice, the most humane thing you would do is say, all business stops until all are served. But you have to contort yourself in ways that actually work against your own morality and humanity to have some semblance, right, of a lived experience in this world. And that's what we talk about on the street party team. Right?
That's what, right.
That's what we chop it up with.
But let me stop though, I get to go and
okay, all right. It's all good, bro. You know, it's something that, this is a saying that I got from my great Uncle Richard.
Yes, sir.
For those of you who don't know, Uncle Richard was my surrogate grandfather. Uncle Richard told me that the worst thing to a white man with a penny, I'm cleaning up Uncle Richard's language, is a black man with a nickel. That is part of the indoctrination of whites to ensure that they participate in keeping black people down. Where did lynching come from? What, after the Civil War, through the 60s, lynching was a big problem for us. We were being lynched, you know, the records say 4,000 people between 1865 and 1960. Those are the ones that were recorded, okay? The people that were lynched, if you look at the photos of the black men that were lynched, 80% of the time these black men were in suits and ties, because the primary target of lynching
was their businessman.
Businessman, exactly.
Was their competitor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, and you know, even having the idea of a black man doing business and being an example to his people, this was a problem.
It wasn't the competitiveness about it. It was that you supposed to be down here.
Right.
This is where you're required to be. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes,
and
sir,
they also were brainwashed also into believing that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. They just as crazy.
Oh, yeah.
You know what
I'm
saying?
Yes.
So, and understand what Doc is saying. Mm-hmm. It's not only a doctor. He history and sister, he's a psychiatrist too.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So he understanding the brain.
Yes, indeed.
Most people don't understand the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And see, that's what they do. They take and go do experiments on the brain and learn everything about the brain and emotions of the brain. This is the government.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And we are that cattle, like we were saying.
Yeah.
He don't want cattle to think.
No.
He don't want cattle to know that he can eat this grass right here that he's standing on.
Mm-hmm.
He want to have to feed. Oh, I'm going to wait for him to put this in his thing, and I'll go over there and eat.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way they got us right now in America.
Right.
We have to wake up. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, indeed.
Mentally.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's something significant what you said. He don't want this man to know that he can eat right here.
Right. You can just bend down and eat right at your foot.
Yeah. You know, this is what made, I'm going to use a well-known example. Fred Hampton's so dangerous, and the Black Panthers, because what the Black Panthers did was they said, "Hey, guess what? See, these are the things that are needed for revolution: shelter, clothing, education, and groceries." All right.
I think what's needed for revolution, the main ingredient that we don't have, and they turning all our young men into.
Mm-hmm.
We need warriors, man.
Yes, indeed. Oh, most
we
definitely.
We need warriors.
Yes,
we
most
need
definitely.
Warriors that want to stand on the front line and fight, and physical, and mental, educational. We need all of these avenues coming at them like they coming at us.
That's where. Let me get to why this was so dangerous.
Right.
Because if you don't have to depend on them for sustenance, okay. You have no use for them, and they cannot manipulate you, enslave you mentally, financially, and so on and so forth.
Right.
If you, and then this, like I said, this is what made a man at 21, Fred Hampton was only 21, brilliant organizer when they murdered him. Right?
Yeah.
That's what made him so dangerous, was that he was showing his people that we do not need them to survive for sustenance.
Not only that, Fred was smart, man.
Yeah.
He was not only for our people, he was for people, period.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? It's a difference. If you got a person being treated the same way and a different nationality, and they're going through the same thing, they're going to feel you.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to feel that pain that every human, if you're human, supposed to feel. Because, you know, some people out there is... don't care about nothing. That just goes like that. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But if he was able to cross the barriers that's what made him super dangerous. Mm-hmm. He was able to go talk to the Russians and go, yo, y'all being treated like this too. Mm-hmm. We all need to get together. That's where the Rainbow Coalition came from. Mm-hmm. You understand?
Okay.
And they taking the Rainbow Coalition and connecting it to this LGBTQYDBDID.
Yeah.
With how they do it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I mean, that ain't something that I'm into, but I'm saying, you know what? And then they connecting it to the railroad. They using all our main meats of function to make you realize this is messed up about what you did to our people.
Mm-hmm.
And they making it something else.
Yeah, that's what they're doing.
Yeah, they're making it something else. Yeah. And it'll be erased in a minute mm-hmm. from history because you're hearing it this way
mm-hmm.
when it was really this way, like the Crips and the Bloods.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
And you know what? You said something really significant right there. This is something that the mainstream doesn't understand and that they have the arrogance not to even address. I saw Bill Maher talking about sometimes you just got to let things go and this, that, and the other. But you don't understand why we are so passionate about this. It's because you've never experienced erasure. Okay? We have been erased from the history books. We have been erased from economic opportunity.
They're trying to take us right now out of the educational curriculum.
That's right.
Now, what kind of government supports that? You understand?
We have to go to the source.
Exactly. We have to go to the source. We have to realize where the source is.
Mm-hmm.
Like Doc said, the PAR program.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, I ain't even heard about that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So this is, we have to direct people to this kind of program
mm-hmm.
so we can even enforce. Mm-hmm. We have to enforce. We have to force this on them. They're not going to do it. Okay,
right.
Give it to me, please.
Right. And then you know, like you said, most people don't know what the PAR program is and what PAR even means.
Right.
All right. And I'm going to shift this over to Doc, but I'm going to say that PAR, it's an acronym, Participatory Action Research.
Right.
And what Dr. Payne did was he took people from the population that he was studying and made them the researchers.
But not only
that's
that,
unheard of.
He paid them for their services.
Right.
You understand?
Yes, indeed.
And inside of that,
mm-hmm.
okay, once I go, okay, yo, man, can you help me? And mm-hmm. then they go, you know, poor people willing to do anything for milk and the cookie
because mm-hmm.
they poor, they hungry.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying?
And let me say this to our listeners in case you don't realize it by now. Damn it, no surprise, do his homework. That's the answer. Big ups on that, brother. That's where. Dr. Payne, I want you to talk more about PAR, Participatory Action Research.
Yeah.
But Dr. Payne, you're a street ethnologist.
Ethnographer.
Ethnologist. Yeah. Excuse me, but my tongue gets wrapped around these crazy
ethnographer.
Teeth. Ethnographer. See, I still can't get it out. But
that sounds like a Payne, more explanatory. I'm going to have to say it for that.
So, street ethnographer, I have a PhD in social psychology, or I'm a social psychologist, and I got that 2005 at the Graduate Center City University of New York.
Mm-hmm.
So Graduate Center is just one of 12 colleges that make up CUNY or the City University of New York.
Mm-hmm.
I then spent a year working on a public health postdoc
mm-hmm.
At Rikers Island. Mm-hmm. That study was running out of Hunter College, another college in CUNY, but it's another institution. And I was in there. It was a reentry program, had a participatory dimension to it as well. I would go into C-74, I think it's one of 12 jails or 14 jails on the line at Rikers Island.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally an island that has its own busing system to get from one institution to another. It's literally like a small city.
Mm-hmm.
Right? C-74 is where
small
the juveniles... Small plantation.
Mm-hmm.
C-74 where the juveniles are located, where the study ran out of. It's also the most violent facility. Youth are generally in the correction facility, in corrections. Youth or juvenile populations are generally the more violent or wild.
Oh, yeah, because they don't go. They ready to go. That's where our warriors at.
Yep.
And they locking all our warriors up. Some of them in there, you know, on some BS that they ain't even supposed to be there. You know what I'm saying? On some, oh, you sold a candy bar, I'm going to give you 30 years. I mean, these are the traps that they have for us in place to keep us in that required position that they demand from us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And then I hung out, we would work with them there, and then they would come out, and then we would follow up with them, because it's a jail. Right? Yeah. It's a prison, which means you're more than likely going to be out after a few months, at least in most instances. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, most county too, jails, that's where the violent facilities are, or mm-hmm. juvenile facilities.
Okay.
Adult prisons, generally, things are more common. Mm-hmm. Because there's a new set of rules, folks are going to spend a whole lot of time there, right. Don't mean it can't get real. But most folks are going to respect it at that point, in a way that you can get away with it, and it's more unstable at the county level. But nonetheless, I did PAR, I did a lot of street PAR, doing street participatory action research. I was training underneath this scholar who does PAR, but she was doing it in schools. I'm like, we got to do this on the street corners.
Right.
And I didn't really see any example of it. You know, I was mm-hmm. going through the literature, I was, you know, knocking on all the scholars' doors, and then my doctor advisor let me know, this is your job to do. So I got four of my friends, and I said, hey, let's go do it. And we did a PAR project that extended from Harlem to Paterson, New Jersey. There's a highway that connects both spaces. And then we also collected data from people, from small towns in between those two cities.
Okay.
But we literally hit the street corners up. We went to where they sold drugs at. We went to where they did X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. We collected 400 surveys, and we also collected a ton of interviews. That model, that project caught some attention. Hadn't been one before it. I created Street PAR. Hadn't been anyone in the country who was doing this work, really training guys from the streets to be scholar warriors, scholar activists, really learn, survey and interview skill sets, to collect large data sets, to analyze it, to write it up, to present it at the conferences, to put it all on your CV, to get paid for it, and then transition from those opportunities right now to do other things in school or at work. PAR is a research experience, but it's also an activism experience. So it's guys from the block, and at that time I was working with guys that were active. And I was trying to make the point that they too want to learn, and they too have are talented, and they have an analysis, and they want to improve their communities, and they love their children, right? So I always say, send me the shooters. Send me all the bad people that you say don't want to do whatever, right? And I'm going to send you back the kings and queens that they already were. And that really was, you know, so street PAR were a bunch of things, right, in terms of as a method and intervention, but more importantly, it was a way for these guys to restore their dignity, acquire resources, acquire skill set, and make an argument for and or on behalf of the people that they love most.
The second piece of audio comes from WGGT-LP, 92.9 G-Town Radio. The station manager, Tom Cassetta, is sharing with our listeners the dedication of the new We Still Here mural on the Maplewood Mall.
On Friday, August 6th, a mural dedication for We Still Here by Chip Thomas, also known as Jetsonorama, and featuring Ursula Rucker in the historic Germantown neighborhood, took place on Maplewood Mall. Mural Arts Executive Director Jane Golden spoke of the importance of this mural and what it means to Germantown.
This project comes out of this curriculum where we think about art and think about civic change. And 2020 was an extraordinary year for learning in our country. And good people everywhere, everyone everywhere, saw a need to do more, to work more intentionally, to open their eyes, to really open their eyes and be honest about the inequities that exist, and to think about change. And so I had to think about the anti-slavery movement and how it was born here in Germantown, and that the Johnson House was a stop on the Underground Railroad. And it was the Germantown YWCA that created the celebration that would become National Black History Month. And the mural is We Still Here. And it's something that residents like Ursula Rucker, who's seen here shouting through a megaphone, have always known and have always talked about. Now it is time for the rest of the world to reckon with this and come out on the right side. So a little bit of background about this work. Well, Ursula Rucker, what can I say, is sort of an extraordinary person, an incredible poet, humanitarian, citizen of our city and the world. And artist Chip Thomas, aka J. Jitsunarama, closely worked with our local high school students. First, studying previous pandemics and civil rights struggles. Then we encouraged them to put their feelings into words or put their feelings into drawings. Some of the poetry is on this wall. At the center is Ursula shouting one of her own poems into the megaphone, hoping that her words will inspire empowerment and peace and resilience, and because it's Ursula Rucker, love. And speaking of love, I love being part of this work. I love being part of a quilt that lifts up every person in the city. I love being part of a project that has Ursula Rucker involved in it, and Chip Thomas, and art education, and the citizens of Germantown. That's what I love. By all, like, logic, I should be tired. I should think, I've been doing this work for so long. Five mayors we've made it through. But you know what? Every day I wake up and think, I am so lucky and grateful and privileged to do work that has meaning, where I work with all of you extraordinary people to create work that is co-owned by the residents of this city. When people say five mayors, that's amazing. Why is the movement of muralism so resilient? We have to pause and think about that. It's because of the broad range of authors it includes. The broad range of authors. Our responsibility is to not go in any kind of prescriptive or didactic way. Why would we? Why would we? Look at the genius that exists throughout this city. Our job is to be a platform for creativity and engagement and access and opportunity and all good things that might be missing. And our job is to be relentless about it and tireless and not look back, to look forward, inspired by all of you. Thank you. You're awesome. I want to thank everybody in this village who helped make this work possible. I know that residents of this city often feel overlooked. And I know that art is just one way of helping to make sure people's voices are heard. But it's a powerful way. It is a powerful way. And so I hope this mural inspires you to amplify your voices and to ensure that you will be heard. With community leaders like you, I am confident that we will have success. Do not ever stop advocating.
Poet and performer Ursula Rucker had a chance to talk about what this mural means to her.
Thank you, Jane. Sarah. Chip Thomas, my homie. Medical doctor on a Navajo reservation in northern Arizona for like 30 years. Healing. Helping, a photographer, a street artist, an artivist, a worker for the people and with the people always. You know, and came to a place called Philly and had heard a John named Ursula Rucker stuff and was like, yo, can I do a mural? And I was like, oh, all right. You know, and that mural was like, you know, it happened in 2014 at a time that my life was, you know, in the garbage, essentially. No money, no gigs. And then that mural happened, and that relationship happened, and that energy, and I got to put words from my poem, Love, on the wall, and have it be there every day. And so for a little shy girl from Mount Airy, via Nicetown, via Lynchburg, Virginia. Got my cousin Daryl in the house. Yeah, we still here. We been here. Oh, we still here, but we been here. That's the point. That's what I need y'all to know. And the Wardlaw family knows that. This family poem is a Germantown poem. Because there are generations of us here. Generations. You ain't coming in here with your new stuff without recognizing us. Cause we still here. See? This is proof. And Like Jane essentially said, until everyone knows that and participates in that energy, then we just gonna keep running around on these gerbil wheels. Me, you know, I think I would prefer, like, you know, I don't know, going a little further, seeing some new things. And anyway, so we're here. I'm emotional, so I'm like rambling, because to look at all of you is almost impossible for me to look at this and not completely lose myself right now. Oh, yeah. We will start caring about each other, okay? Or else you're gonna have to hear my mouth. And don't nobody want that. It's not always poems and nice performances with music. Sometimes I say other stuff people don't like. I'm from Philly. I'm from G-Town. I say some. Okay? So, yeah, we're going to have to get it together in Philly. We have always historically been known as a progressive. Even with all this founding fathers type history and energy, we always push through. We always do some new stuff. Don't stop. Don't stop. And G-Town, ain't we special? Ain't we different and unique? Huh? Are we? So yeah, let's keep building and helping each other. That's the only way. Who said helping each other was corny? Who started telling that lie? It's the coolest thing you could ever do. And what else? What's on that megaphone? I'm sorry, what? Oh, I'm sorry, what? Okay, okay. Thank you.
You can see the mural on 22 Maplewood Mall between Germantown Avenue and Green Street, right off Armat.
Thanks for joining us. My name is David Juro, and I'm the host of Neighborly Chats at WRGU LP, Germantown United CDC. Indie Radio Garden is a Prometheus Radio Project production.